Good evening and welcome to Transatlantic History Ramblings with Lauren and Brian. I'm Lauren from Swansea in the UK, and I'm supposed to let you know that we're all recording this.
Yeah. Please let everyone know that they are being recorded.
And with me, as always, is...
It's the one who presses the record button. It's Brian in Buffalo, US of A. And actually... I just told everybody they're being recorded. All of you listening to the show right now are not being recorded, because that would be one fucking cacophony of sound.
And also, sometimes you are not the only one that presses record. Sometimes I have to do emergency recording.
Once. One time.
And I felt really guilty because it popped up saying, please let the other person, you know, please let everybody in the call know that they're being recorded. And I was like... Should I have done that? Did he not know? I was like, come on,
Lauren, he's there for a reason. One time you pressed record. And let me tell you something. Between our bonus episodes and specials and little in-between things we've done almost 190 episodes.
I know.
So you've done one where you pressed record. So it's not sometimes. Well, it's, you know, yeah.
Well, the we've never really realized that if we're both added into the call, even if one of us isn't present, it gets saved to the call and we can both access it, access the recording. So it was a learning curve.
It was, and it was a pretty cool one too.
So yes, because I just sort of went, oh crikey, what do I do? It's the recording has stopped, and then I pressed record, and then Jacob goes, is anybody recording this? I was like, yes, I am.
And we have got some great feedback on the Dacre episode, by the way.
Was it my recording bit? Was the bit I recorded?
It was. People were like, oh, the way Lauren pressed record. No one has ever pressed record quite the way Lauren has pressed record. Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
I know. It was art. It was, I just sort of, spur of the moment, thought, oh. Yeah.
There was a certain flair, a certain je ne sais quoi. Other than that, Lauren, how's the week going?
It's going all right. Yes, work is working, and we are now heading close to Easter, which means that we are heading towards Eastery things. I saw a passion play in my church on Friday, and it was phenomenal. They were all...
naked?
No, they were not.
Oh, well.
It was a play on the... they only did part of the passion plays, because the passion plays are a series, and you normally... they would normally be performed outside, and you'd walk around each of the stations, and you'd view the play. But they did the bit where
they beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, they did that bit, and they were, and it was from where Caiaphas goes to Pontius Pilate and says, "Please arrest him. He's doing our head in."
Do you realize how fucking weird it is, Lauren? When what? I say, you know what I mean, the part where they beat the shit out of me, you're like, yeah, they did that bit. It was beautiful.
It was quite. It was really moving, because do you remember the picture of where I had where the picture I showed you when I had my confirmation?
Yes.
Well, that's where they set up the cross. So that's where we go up to have communion. And so it was really poignant to have that there, because that's literally where where the Eucharist is done.
So did they give him a good ass whooping?
Off stage, but okay. it was really brutal, and it was really worth it, and it's money for good cause as well, which is always big thumbs up, and it was just phenomenal. And so the next one now is will be Holy Week, and I think there's a choral piece they've got. There's two choral pieces. There's Swinging Samson and Jerusalem Joy, and then we have some. What?
Jerusalem Joy. I'm sorry. Do you want the heathen in me to come out, Lauren?
No, I don't.
Well, I was going to draw a comparison to your passion play to tonight's show, because whereas you got to witness the Messiah getting his ass handed to him, we're going to be talking boxing tonight with my dear friend and author and historian Gene Aguilera, all about Mexican-American and Latino fighters in California throughout history. But we'll go back to the passion play now. It was just a little plug for tonight's show, and I figured since we're talking about people being beaten, it kind of fit in.
And then, so after, so that'll be it. And then on the Wednesday, we have an Agape supper. And then Thursday is Maundy Thursday. And then Friday, I'll spend about a few hours in church when we do Stations of the Cross. And then Easter Vigil on Saturday. And then Easter Sunday then. But we also do, but we also do Palm Sunday as well. So that will be a week.
My brother does Palm Sunday every day. Oh, that was the heathen in me again. Oh, did you notice even the audience didn't laugh at that?
Your friend is going to beat you up.
Let me try that again, Lauren. My brother does Palm Sunday every day. No?
I can't believe your friends are the Catholic priest.
Well, they've heard worse, Lauren. They take confession.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. So, you don't like my jokes. You don't like my plugs for the show. You don't like the way I press record.
Should we call the whole thing off?
I think we shall. But before we do that, I think I'm going to try to tell you some jokes.
Oh, please don't.
Oh, Lauren, I got some good ones today because you're a writer. I'm a writer. You used to work in a bookstore. And okay. I've got library jokes.
Okay.
So, man walks into the library and says, yeah, I'd like some fish and chips. Librarian looks at him and says, sir, this is a library. And he says, oh, I'm sorry. I'd like some fish and chips.
But you've just confused half the audience that come from America, Brian, because you've just said chips rather than fries.
Oh, we sell fish and chips here in restaurants, some of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get it, though, Lauren? He whispered it.
I know.
Because he was in the library.
Because he was in the library and he's got to be quiet, yeah.
All right, you didn't like that. I'm trying one more library joke, Lauren, okay?
Okay, if you have to.
So, woman walks into the library and asks the librarian, do you have any books on paranoia? And the librarian says, yeah, they're right behind you.
It's very mean.
That's funny. Not?
No.
No. Well, you know what is funny? Well, you're going to find it funny, and our audience is going to find it funny, and our friend the priest is going to find it funny, and our guest tonight's going to find it funny, but I don't find it funny. Do you want to know what that is, Lauren?
What?
This is the last episode of Transatlantic History Ramblings of my 40s.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. It's, I don't even know what to say. It's,
you're halfway to 100.
It's quite sad, but I'm getting older, Lauren. Do you like my Hallmark movie music there? So, I will be 50 very soon. You're laughing at that, aren't you?
Well, it's not funny if it upsets you.
I mean, I'm half a century, Lauren.
Yep.
Do you know when you were a kid and you'd say, I don't ever want to be that age? That's the age I'm at. It's a big number, Lauren.
Could be worse.
Really? How?
I'm going to set myself up here, but you could be turning 50 without the bathroom, buddy.
That's a good point, Lauren. Because I am in possession of a bathroom buddy, it makes turning 50 that much easier. And folks, let me tell you, I am working on some major improvements of the bathroom buddy. We all know about the bathroom bidet, which is the bathroom buddy I'm working on. But I'm also working on a couple other things that might spruce up the bathroom buddy, so to speak. Maybe a portable bathroom buddy. You know, one that you can fold and, like, put into a pocket. Because, you know, sometimes you have to poop when you're not at home. And wouldn't it be nice to have a portable bathroom buddy on the road? No? You didn't want to talk. You brought up the bathroom buddy, and now you don't want to talk about it. Don't you think the fold-up bathroom buddy is brilliant? Like, you know those fold-up umbrellas that you can, like, fit in a pocket? Kind of like that. And I'm also I'm trying to come up with one where I might put, like, you have to visualize this one, Lauren. I mean, okay, you know what the bathroom buddy looks like, right?
Yeah.
You know, you tear off some paper and you put it on there and you wrap it around so that, and then when you use that paper, you press the little button and the paper goes bloop, right back into the toilet and you put some more paper on it. What if you put a toilet paper roll in the middle of the bathroom buddy and you could have the whole roll on there and it just flips over like those old towels in locker rooms from the 1950s?
Oh, I don't know. This is getting a bit gross now.
Well, it's better than having to... I don't know, Lauren, but I'm working on improvements of the bathroom buddy. And you're right. Being 50 is that much easier with the bathroom buddy. And you know what I'm going to do tomorrow, Lauren?
What?
I am going to go and enjoy my last Duff's Wings of my 40s tomorrow.
I think you're making a meal out of this.
It'll be my last Duff's of my 40s. And I'm going to enjoy them. And just to be rebellious, I might take my bathroom buddy right into Duff's with me.
Oh, please don't do that.
Yeah, you're right, because it's not a fold-up one. You know, I'd have to carry it around like a scepter. You remember you told me about the guy whose job it is to wipe the king's ass?
The king's bathroom buddy.
What if he held the bathroom buddy like a scepter? Wouldn't that be awesome?
Oh, God.
What?
Oh, no.
I think it's brilliant. Brilliant, I tell you. Brilliant. But... I'm going to, yeah, 50, Lauren. 5-0. Like Hawaii, but not like Hawaii.
5-0.
If I do any more, we'll get sued for copyright.
Do you know what we should have done for your last show of the 40s? We should have got our guests together who have turned 50 to give you some advice.
Yeah, I have been getting a lot of welcome to the club messages, but every time I get one, I say,
"Who's been sending you those?"
People I know, people from the shop, a couple listeners have actually. That are friends, that are listeners, not like people I don't know. Like, I love all my listeners. Hello out there. And you can all feel free to reach out to us at any time. You too can email us at trans.history.rambling@gmail.com. You can reach out to Brian. You can reach out to Lauren. You can compliment Lauren on her beautiful record pressing skills. You can tell me about how brilliant my bathroom buddy innovations are. You could send us jokes. You can make fun of me for being old. you know, you can write to us there. You can reach out to us on Facebook. Look to join our Facebook group, History Ramblings. Or we're on X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it at TA History. We're also on Threads, the new social media Threads that Meta runs. We're on there under, I believe we're Transatlantic History Ramblings, maybe TA History. I'm not sure. I think it's TA History. What are we on Instagram and shit, Lauren?
At History Ramblings on Instagram, and on Facebook, I think, is History Ramblings with Lauren and Brian.
So you can reach out to us there. Make fun of me, praise Lauren, ask Lauren to read your bedtime stories, talk about the king's butt wipe, you know, whatever.
So did we have any genuine feedback from last week's episode?
Yes, we did, actually. There were people, because, you know, we were talking about what people would like to see in a documentary about Bram Stoker. And, you know, we had some suggestions that I never even thought of. Two different listeners wrote in and said they'd really like them to talk about how sickly Bram was.
Yeah, that's kind of like a mystery, isn't it? Because up until the age of 7, he was literally bedbound. And then all of a sudden, there seems to be this miraculous recovery. I know they do cover it in Dracul. And they give... Yeah. They give a reason why he's cured, and I'm not going to say it because it will give a spoiler, because it dominates the book.
But yeah, it was interesting to me that we didn't think of that, and Dacre didn't mention it either, that, you know, here's a guy who was, like you said, bedbound for many years and then recovered to be a world traveler.
I know, it's weird.
We also, one person suggested they would love us to not us, obviously, because we're not making it. It's Jason and Dacre. They would like them to discuss all the copyright issues with Dracula after Bram passed away, which I thought was very fascinating because, look, Dracula is one of the most iconic names in the history of fiction. And there were copyright struggles and lawsuits and issues, and, you know, from the plays to the movies to who owned the rights to what. Was it Florence Stoker? Was it Balderson? Was it Universal Studios? We know that when they made Nosferatu, they lost the lawsuit because they didn't have the right to use it, and the copies were all to be destroyed. Thank you, bootleggers, for saving Nosferatu. Not that I encourage bootlegging, but... it worked then. But yeah, that was interesting. And do you know who else reached out to me about 2 days after that show came out?
Ooh.
Jason Figgis, the filmmaker.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to thank us for the wonderful things we said about him. He said, and I believe I am quoting directly, that my voice is so powerful and wonderful that he could listen to me talk about anything. So I got that going for me, Lauren. Do you think the voice will start going now that I'm 50?
I wouldn't have thought so.
But now that you're thinking about it?
No. I think you're being a bit silly there. I think, you know, I don't think your voice will go.
No.
I mean, James Earl Jones's voice hasn't gone, and he's like 90.
It's gone. Vader don't sound like Vader no more.
Oh, I'm sure that's not true. He will always sound like Darth Vader.
Well, he might, but and I just want to do want to thank the audience for the feedback and all the well wishes. And we got several emails welcoming us back saying, you know, that we'd been gone for several weeks and they were worried about us. And I explained that it was all Lauren's fault. She forgot how to press record.
It was all my fault. I had a medical procedure.
You did. Plus, remember, I got that cold and I had like no voice for a couple weeks and. I'm sorry, I had no dynamic and powerful and wonderful voice.
It was, It was really weird, though, when I had the procedure, because after I had it done, I felt like I could take on the world. And then the pain set in.
Well, yeah, I mean, you get a spinal tap, you feel pretty fucking powerful afterwards.
Yeah, it was very weird.
Yeah. Speaking of weird, Lauren.
Yeah.
You know how much I love whales.
Yes.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you about the last time I was in Wales? Yeah. Last time I was in Wales, this guy came up to me out of nowhere on the street and said, "Hey, can you help me round up 37 sheep?" And I said, "Sure, 40.
You've never been to Wales.
No, but 40 is rounding 37 up, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, but I bet all you hear in Wales is...
No.
Lauren, why? I hear them in your house right now. Lauren, get the sheep out of the room.
If you did that and Theo was here, he'd beat you up.
Did you name that sheep Theo?
No, if Theo could hear you, he would beat you up.
Speaking of Wales, I'm going to give a little teaser that in a couple weeks, we're going to be welcoming a guest on, a first-time guest, who is on the National Board of Arts for Wales. And they're not a Welshie, but they are in the UK, and it's going to be great, and I can't wait. I can't say anything more about it now, because that's just a little tease for the guest, but I haven't been as excited about having a guest on in a long... Well, I'm excited about all our guests. I love our guests. And tonight's guest, the great Gene Aguilera, dear friend. We haven't had him on for a couple of years, and he'll be back in a little bit. But before we get to Gene, I think, Lauren, you better clear your throat. I mean, just give it a really good clear.
Okay.
Now, give me a good day in history.
Today in history.
Yeah, that was okay. Okay. Maybe you can make up for it by giving me a really good day in history.
Well, I do have a very good day in history. Thank you for asking. Okay. Today, the 12th of March in 1455, the first record of Johannes Gutenberg's Bible, the letter was dated to this day by Ina Silvio Piccoloni, and the letter dates the Bible printed a year before.
Did you know, Lauren, and I don't know if you know this, and folks at home, I don't know if you all know this. You know, the Gutenberg Bible has absolutely nothing to do with Steve Gutenberg.
Did you think it was like his autobiography or something?
It's for years I did. I thought it was the original script to Police Academy or something. Three Men and a Baby. But no, has nothing to do with Steve Gutenberg. Short Circuit, none of it. You like Steve Gutenberg films, Lauren?
I do. He was a very big part of my childhood watching Police Academy.
And Short Circuit?
And Short Circuit.
Three Men and a Baby?
Three Men and a Baby, yes.
What about Can't Stop the Music? The first movie he was in, the Village People movie.
No, I've not seen that.
I can't believe I just named all these Steve Gutenberg films. There's something wrong with me. Oh, that's right. I'm 50.
But yeah, Short Circuit was a favorite. And every bank holiday, there used to be a Police Academy. To be quite honest with you, there's not been a Police Academy on television for years. Very disappointed.
Well, you know why that is.
Yeah.
They are no longer what would be deemed politically correct. A lot of humor from the films we grew up with, or I grew up with back in my day, the humor is not what is socially acceptable now.
I mean, somebody was complaining about Indiana Jones the other day, and I'm just like, please don't, because that's awesome.
You think that's bad, folks? Don't go watch Revenge of the Nerds again. Nothing in that film is legal now.
Yeah.
It must be the most politically incorrect film ever. The heroes of the film not only create revenge porn, they also rape a woman. And she falls in love with him for it. They cheat, they steal, they lie. It's a pretty bad film. They hint at bestiality. It's, and you know what? This was a comedy for fucking young people when I was growing up. And it was pretty funny. It was funny. Can't say that now. I mean, I just did, but you're not supposed to.
No.
But that's like same thing. Police Academy, you can't show that anymore. I'm, you know, Short Circuit, I think you could probably still get away with.
Yeah. But then I don't think you could get away with Blazing Saddles these days anyway.
No. Which, there is a book coming out soon by one of our dear friends and author, Bruce Hollenbeck, all about that magnificent year for Mel Brooks, where he created not one, but two of the all-time comedy masterpieces. One director, one year, two legendary films, Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein, same fucking year. And he's got a book coming out about that, and he'll be coming on the show when the book comes out.
Yeah.
Do you realize we just went off on a 5-minute rant about Steve Guttenberg because of the Bible?
I know.
Yeah, and I'm not done yet. Did I tell you I bought Sarah? What was the name of the fucking robot in that movie?
Johnny Five.
Johnny Five. I bought her a replica Johnny Five model kit.
And now I'm old for remembering Johnny Five.
Yeah, you are old for remembering Johnny Five. I'm Johnny 5-0, Lauren. But she loves that movie. And the sequel. The sequel was pretty shitty, but she likes the sequel too.
Oh.
Yeah, I got her this like Johnny Five model kit. She loves it. She has it at work. Because I said, get that fucking thing out of here. Because wasn't he a military weapon?
I think he was.
Yeah, and then he got struck by lightning or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
All I know is we got to stop talking Gutenberg. It's getting a little creepy, Lauren.
Okay, get on to your day in history then.
Okay, my day in history, so we can stop talking about creepy things. My day in history is March 12th, 1980, killer clown John Wayne Gacy found guilty of 33 murders.
What? Wow. I wouldn't have liked to have been his confessor.
Well, you know, I wouldn't have liked to have been in his crawl space where 31 of the bodies were, or 30 of the bodies. As a matter of fact, interesting side note, Steve Guttenberg was never in a movie about John Wayne Gacy. But there is a multi-part documentary coming out all about John Wayne Gacy.
Yes, I was going to say that. By the man who I blame for creeping me out.
Why?
Because I've been creeped out in years.
Why?
Fish.
Yes. By the filmmaker who brought you the films on Carl Panzeram and Albert Fish and serial killer culture and the friend of our show. And I'm hoping that when he finishes, when the Gacy documentary premieres, that he will come on our show and we'll have a nice... Well, I don't know if you can have a nice conversation about Gacy, but have a conversation about Gacy. Oh. There we go. So, yeah, that's my day in history, Lauren, is that it was the day, today in history, that they found that motherfucker guilty.
Good.
They ended up frying his clown ass.
Yeah, kind of worried about America, the way that they, you know, the changes in execution they're making is getting a bit controversial.
Do you remember what his clown name was?
Pogo?
Pogo. See that, Lauren? You're a sick little one. You remember Pogo. Do you think if they ever make another Pogo movie that Steve Guttenberg will play Pogo?
No, leave Steve Guttenberg out of this.
I'm making everything about Steve Guttenberg from now on. Oh, Sarah just got home. Sarah, I was just telling the world that we got you the Johnny Five.
Yes.
And you love Johnny Five. Yes. And you even like the sequel. How can you like the sequel if there's no Guttenberg? That's true. But I just want to tell Lauren, as you can hear, Sarah's here. Sarah, the world says hi. Me and Lauren were talking about our days in history, and her day in history was that today, March 12th, 1455, was the first recorded printing of the Gutenberg Bible. And I had to tell her that Gutenberg Bible had nothing to do with Steve Guttenberg.
Or the Stonecutters.
Or the Stonecutters from The Simpsons. They made Steve Guttenberg a star. Lauren, would you like to discuss any other Steve Guttenberg masterpieces?
No, I think we should get on to our guest.
Should we get on to our guest?
Yeah.
Hey, Lauren.
Yes.
Hey, Lauren.
Yes.
How many Freudian psychoanalysis does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know, Brian.
Two. One to change the light bulb and one to hold their penis. I mean their mother. I mean the latter. I thought it was funny. I guess no one else did. But then again, I'm 50, so old person humor. All right, Lauren, you're right. We should bring on our guest, Mr. Gene Aguilera. He has got a brand new book out from Arcadia Press. It's part of the Images of America series. And this one is Mexican-American Boxing from the Golden State. That's right, the Golden State of California, primarily Los Angeles. This book is phenomenal. I actually pre-ordered it, got an advanced copy, and I got it. I ordered it directly from Gene so I could get him to sign it for me. But it's as good as all of his other books, his award-winning books, Mexican-American Boxing in Los Angeles, Latino Boxing in Southern California, and The Lost Stories of West Coast Latino Boxing. This new one ranks right up there with all of them. And I'm sorry you couldn't be here for the interview, Lauren, so you're going to get a kick out of this listening to it, too. But since you weren't here, I'm going to let you fire up the magic interview box. You want to do it?
Yes, it's going to be as artful as I press record.
It's the magic interview box.
All right, I got to admit, that was pretty good interview box pressing you did, Lauren.
Thank you.
I'm so impressed, I'm going to let you flip the switch. All right, everybody, you are in for a treat tonight because we are going back into Brian's absolute wheelhouse and we are talking his favorite topic in the world. Yes, you know it. It's boxing time. And I am so thrilled to be joined once again by my very dear old friend who I've known for going on 25 years now. Do you realize we've known each other 25 years?
What was the first year you went to Catastota, Brian?
Oh, God, early 90s.
Well, you know what? Ruben got inducted in 91. Ruben Olivares, a great champion from Mexico. Two-time bantamweight, two-time featherweight world champion. We got inducted in 1991. So I don't know if you went that year, but that's you started going.
I think 92 was my first year.
Wow. We were going for every year until recently. A couple years ago, we haven't gone, but who knows what will happen in the future.
Well, I'm hoping to see you there again, but I feel like I see you anyway with your fantastic books that keep coming out. And the latest one from the this is from the Images of America series by Arcadia Press.
Yeah.
And so, this book is Mexican American Boxing from the Golden State, the wonderful New York, U.S. of A., but California, U.S. of A. My dear friend, my amigo.
Yes.
We go way back, and I love you, brother, and I'm so glad to see you again. Mr. Gene Aguilera, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Brian, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I get to see you or talk to you here for the next hour because, you know, we used to see each other in Canastota, but everything has changed over there, and the winds have changed. And we used to have the greatest time with you on the grounds, you and your brother, and also the greatest times at Graziano's, which is no longer there.
No longer there.
Days In is no longer used by the International Boxing Hall of Fame. Everything has moved over to another location. It's just not the same. So, you know, we're here,
it's,
though.
It's not the same, I'll tell you. Like I said, I've been going every year since 92. Isn't it amazing we've known each other that long and we're only in our, what, late 20s now?
I'm actually 39.
Oh, yeah, Jack Benny, thank you so much. Actually, can I tell you something, Gene?
Wink, wink.
You want to hear something funny?
Yes, sir.
This is the last show before I turn 50.
Oh, my God.
This is the last episode of Transatlantic History Ramblings before Brian is 50s.
Brian, well, I just want to welcome you into the 50s club. And wish you a very happy birthday with 50 candles on there, which is enough to start a forest fire. So be careful.
I know it's going to ignite my hair. It's going to go all over the place.
That's a lot of candles burning. So you be careful out there in New York.
I'm going to, because, you know, that'll be a wildfire like you guys get in California.
Oh, yeah. It's happening all the time here, unfortunately.
But we are not here to talk wildfires or Brian being old, although Lauren loves making fun of that. We're here to talk both of our passions and our loves.
Yes.
And that's the great sport of boxing.
Yes, yes.
And you, like I said, you've got, this is your fourth book, isn't it?
My fourth book on Arcadia Publishing. And I've got, Brian, I want to tell you, I'm going to give you an exclusive here, worldwide exclusive.
Yes.
I'm only going to do one more book. I'm telling you, one more, and then I'm going to retire from being an author.
Well, but do you know what the book is? Can you reveal that?
I can't reveal it yet, but it'll be in boxing. It'll be about here. I'll tell you right now. My four books that I've released have been boxing books about Mexican Americans, Mexicanos, or Latinos. My fifth book will be no different, but it'll be a whole new set of brand new great stories and art and pictures about all the great Latino Mexican boxers.
Well, I love talking to fellow, not only fans, but historians and people who are passionate about the sport. And the great thing is I'm an East Coast guy. You're a West Coast guy. So we both have that history and tradition that we're so different in the sport, but we're so vital to the sport.
Yes.
You know, in the East Coast, our tradition in history, we had all the great, the Italian fighters and the Jewish fighters and the Irish fighters. And in California, you had all the great Latino fighters that changed the world, that changed the sport. And I mean, how old were you when you discovered this wonderful sport that we love?
Well, I got into boxing when I was 10 years old. I'm going to give away my age. I know it. I was 10 years old when Cassius Clay challenged Sonny Liston for the title, 1964. And I want to say Miami. Was that Miami?
Miami.
Miami Beach right there. So, I was drawn into it because I was reading the back then my aunt used to bring home the newspaper every night. 10 cents. It was a LA Los Angeles Times and the Herald Examiner. So I start, you know, watching, reading about this fight coming up, you know, because I was a big Dodger fan, LA Dodger fan with Sandy Koufax, Don Drysdale, Maury Wills, that Tommy Davis bunch. And I started to get memorized by this Cassius Clay character, colorful, talented. And I just started reading about him. Then as the fight got closer, Brian, I started seeing him in the news, you know, every night in the news, they talk about the big fight coming up. And that one, it just sucked me into the sport until this day. And and then, you know, the okay, like you were mentioning, you're the East Coast guy who also had the Madison Square Garden.
Yep.
And over here in L.A., California, we have the Olympic Auditorium. And so I start going to the Olympic Auditorium, begging my uncle to take me there. And we used, but the first time I went there was to see wrestling, no less.
Oh, yeah.
You look like you're a wrestling fan, too, somehow.
Well, you know, my last book that just came out was a wrestling book.
See?
The Wrestlers, Wrestlers, the Masters of the Craft of Professional Wrestling, available on Amazon and all fine booksellers everywhere. But what was funny is my book was a history book. It was an oral history book for the most part. I interviewed as many living wrestlers that I could get a hold of, and there's over 50 that were interviewed for the book. And a lot of it, we ended up talking about the Olympic Auditorium.
Yes.
And I went into this project, not even as a wrestling guy, you know, I went in this as a historian, but I'm more of a boxing historian. So they'd start talking about the Olympic Auditorium. I'm like, oh, I know all about the Olympic Auditorium. And they're like, oh, no, you don't. It was very different for wrestling.
Uh-huh. Wow. And now, did you get the Destroyer before he left?
The Destroyer is the reason the book was written.
Oh, God, I didn't even know this.
Dick Beyer, the Destroyer, was from Buffalo, where I'm from.
Wow. Wow. You know what, Brian? I don't know how you're going to do this, but you got to come to L.A. to see the Olympic Auditorium exhibit that I am co-curator on with Steve DeBro.
Oh, I would love to.
You better hurry, man, because we have the Destroyer robe, which I will send once next time I go there, I'll take pictures specifically.
Please.
We have Freddie Blassie's satin blue ring jacket. I record my 45 in there of Freddie Blassie, King of All Men. And the Olympic was known for boxing, wrestling, roller derby, and music. And we covered all things in this beautiful La Plaza, the Cultura y Artes Museum in downtown LA. So I'm just hoping you could come out and I'll meet you there and buy you lunch.
Oh, I would love to. And you got to come here because, like I said, Dick Beyer, the Destroyer, was from this area.
Yes.
His family still lives in this area. And he started a company here long before he died. He ran it because, you know, he spent so much of his career in Japan. He brought back Park Golf, which is a Japanese sport.
Oh,
and the only Japanese park golf course is up here, and it's Destroyer Park Golf.
Wow.
But he was a local hero.
Yeah,
local legend. And when he passed away, that's when I said no one sat down and talked to a lot of these old timers and got their full oral histories. So I decided it was time to do that.
There's the post.
The Olympic.
When I mailed you the books?
Oh, yeah. I got that right here.
Okay, then out. There you go, my friend. So you there it is. It's going to end on May 19th, Brian.
Oh, about a month before the Hall of Fame. I got to try to get out there.
Run for the weekend, man. A quick weekend. Dine and dance.
So you went to wrestling first.
Yes.
At the Olympic.
Yes, but I didn't stay long in wrestling. I've Bobo Brazil, Pedro Morales, Edward Carpentier. Do you know those names? Mr. Moto, Haystack Calhoun. I was a little bit more of a casual wrestling fan, but once I got into boxing, I never went back to wrestling again. Never. The excitement was too high for me with boxing when Jimmy Leonard would tell the timekeeper to ring the bell two times before he started and is announcing the main event. And
for all you young listeners out there, that's Jimmy Leonard Sr.
Yes.
Not the Jimmy Leonard we all know that what does boxing. His father was the voice of the Olympic Auditorium.
They're both Hall of Famers, father and son. Ring announcer combos.
And the, a lot of also younger listeners might know Jimmy Lennon because he appeared in some of the Rocky films doing the ring announcing. So that's Jimmy Lennon Sr., the one that Gene is talking about.
And on my third book, Brian, I had Jimmy Lennon Jr. do the forward. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah. I've got all your books. You kidding me?
And I had Jimmy Lennon Jr. do that. And so, you know, that family, I think they're Jimmy Lennon's sisters were the Lennon sisters, the singing
group. The singers.
The Lennon sisters. So they have such an entertainment background and Jimmy Lennon Jr. is, you know, just all over the world, you know, announcing the great fights.
And you know what's funny? He's getting older now and he's starting to look more like his dad. And I think that's wonderful.
They look alike and they sound alike.
They do.
Unbelievable.
You have such an advantage over me when it comes to seeing. As we all know, I'm going to be 50, so that gave away my age. My formative years of boxing were the late 70s through the 80s was when my love for it started.
Uh-huh.
And at that time in boxing, other than the Four Kings, the Leonard, Hagler, Hearns, Duran, the real talent of boxing was dominated by the Latino fighters and the Mexican American fighters in California. Yeah. And you got to be there for all of it.
I feel so blessed and honored to be there. In those days, Brian, it was like, you know, $3, $4, $5, you know, to get in the Olympic. And I was looking for that. I was this, you know, a college student. I didn't have no money. So I scrimped and saved and got some friends and went out to the Olympic Auditorium and we collected I collected these great posters that I don't know. Can you see that one man in the background there?
Oh, I can. Absolutely.
That's Palomino Muniz right there. And then next to that is my plaque for the WBC Legends Hall of Fame. And I got inducted a few years ago on that.
I got to get myself inducted in there someday.
You got to, man. You got to. And then there, over there at the corner is a little glove that was for the National Boxing Hall of Fame that I got inducted right there.
It just still amazes me that the legends, I mean, how many Hall of Famers were you watching at the Olympic Auditorium for $3 or $5 a ticket?
Yes, it was, I mean, Bobby Chacon, Danny Little Red Lopez, Carlos Palomino, you know, on and on. We had a great run during the 70s. 70s was a great era. And then, you know, and then in the late 70s, you had Salvador Sanchez, throned Danny Little Red Lopez. And you had the coming of Julio Cesar Chavez, who won his first title at the Olympic Auditorium. So,
Think about that. Just think about what you just said. In one breath, you mentioned Salvador Sanchez and Julio Cesar Chavez. To a boxing fan, hearing those things in one breath can take your breath away, and you got to see them there in their primes.
Right there, right at the Olympic Auditorium. Salvador Sanchez fought a very tough fight against a kid from TJ, Juan Escobar. It was a draw. And they had each other up and down, and it wasn't even in the main event. It was the semi-main. Bazooka Limon was in the main event. And
Hall of Famer.
Yes, Bazooka Limon, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's Canastota, but he's other.
Yeah, I know he's World Boxing Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I think he's Canastota.
I don't think so, no, because I would remember seeing him there. We got Chiquita Gonzalez in Canastota. We got Finito Lopez. We got Marquez, Barrera, Morales. But not Bazooka Limon, which I think makes a case for that, you know?
He deserves to be.
He would. What else? He would, they call him, in Spanish, they call him the soldier. Because he was just, he was in the military when he was a young kid. And I mean, that guy, man, had no quit in him. The best fight that I saw on TV live was Bobby Chacon against Bazooka Limon, number 4 in Sacramento. Brian, what a war. If you haven't seen that, please watch it tonight, man. It's unbelievable. Bobby's losing the fight. The 15th round, he knocks Bazooka down. Bazooka barely gets up, and Bobby wins the decision. Did you see that? Have you seen that one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
If I haven't seen it 100 times, it's too bad.
I was just thinking how big these names were. And I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of modern sport fans don't realize how big boxing really was. Mm-hmm. When it was still getting network coverage, when it was still getting covered in newspapers and magazines, Bobby Chacon was in a fucking Warren Zevon song.
Yes.
He was so popular.
I write about that in my first book.
Yeah.
Remember, I have a Bobby Chacon chapter in my first book. It's not all dedicated to him, but in my newest book, I have a whole chapter dedicated to him. But I quote the lyrics, that little section of Bobby Chacon in my chapter introduction on Thrills and Chills with a Schoolboy.
Oh, this new book, I'm telling you, I got it. A signed copy. Thank you very much. You can all be jealous now.
Thank you, Brian.
But I opened it up and cover to cover the first night.
Yeah.
Tears in my eyes because I've been a boxing historian for years and done books and articles, and I'm going through this and there's so many pictures and articles that I've never seen before. Yeah. As someone who spent years in archives and researching, you were able to find so much that I've never seen. And it's absolutely incredible.
You know, Bobby Chacon's sister, her name is Bertie. She really helped me out a lot, and I sent her a copy. She got it about a week ago, Brian, and she wrote me back. She goes, Gene, you did amazing research. The story is heartbreaking for me to relive again, but happy that you got the story right.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's mind blowing. And I, you know, before we go any farther, all these names you've mentioned so far, you haven't mentioned my favorite and your best friend.
Yes. Ruben Olivares. Yes.
Ruben is
Mr. Knockout.
I tell people, if you want to see what pure machismo was,
yes,
look up Ruben Olivares fights.
Look it up on YouTube. When Ruben wins the world title in 1969 against Lionel Rose at the Forum, it is just there's so much. And Lionel Rose was a great Aborigine world champion from Australia, and he was no bum champion. His guy was burning right through the rankings in those days. And here's Ruben comes up. He's 53-0 with 50 knockouts. And George Parnassus put that fight together. He paid Lionel Rose $100,000, which is insane back then for a little man. And because Lionel really didn't want to fight Ruben and wanted to move up, he wanted to evade Ruben by going up to featherweight. And then George says, no, let's do if you want to move up after the fight, that's up to you. But here's $100,000 sign. And he did. And he got knocked out in 4 rounds by Ruben in an incredible performance.
And just think about that, folks. 53-0 with 50 knockouts.
When he won.
And Mayweather can run around claiming he's the greatest that ever lived. So if Ruben would have retired after winning the title, he would have been 54-0 with 53 knockouts. Mayweather, what do you say about that?
Yeah. Yes, he can't.
And Ruben was listed as a bantamweight. Okay, yeah. I'm saying that. What year was that? I'm trying to think if there was mid division. It was 118 at that point.
Yes. They didn't have super bantam in those days.
I was going to say they didn't have the split weights at that point. So he was 118 pounds, they claimed. If he weighed over 110 for that fight, I'm amazed.
He was in tip-top condition. He was, nobody could have beaten Ruben that night. He was just, what? I'm sure you've seen that one, right, Brian?
When
he
many, many times.
It's in black and white. That's how old it is, man. And he just rips into Lionel Rose, slices and dices him, and is leaves him, you know, leaves him on the canvas to be counted out.
It's always funny when you tell people who are up and coming boxing fans, or what I call mainstream boxing fans, like the guys that will watch the pay-per-view fights but don't know who anybody in any other division is. There's always that moment that clicks with them when they actually start watching boxing, not just the big superstar fight, and they realize, these lower weight classes are so much better than the bigger weight classes.
Yes. Yeah.
Whereas you, coming from LA with all the Latino fighters and the Mexican American fighters, the majority of it was lower weight classes. You were spoiled.
Yeah.
Spoiled at an early age.
Yes, I just love to see action. And the Mexican fighter, for the most part, you know, came forward, traded blows, body shots to the liver, left hooks to the jaw. They had a science about them, and you know, they had great managers and trainers down there, and they were just exciting to watch. And that you know, and being the Olympic was only 4 miles from me in East LA, and I tried to get there as much as I can, and got all those great posters. I call them the floating head posters that are worth so much money these days. And so you're right. I was very fortunate to be growing up in the golden age of boxing, which was, you know, I started reading about it in the 60s, started attending in the 70s until now. I still attend, not as much as I used to, but.
Because it's not $5 a ticket anymore.
It ain't $5. It's $500 a ticket now. So, but not only that, you know, I'm a little disappointed in our sport of boxing, and we want to get into that. We can talk a little bit about
that. Well, we're going to do that a little bit later, because I want to be happy until we get to that. Because, you know, we'll both get miserable and we'll be cross the old men at that point.
Yes.
And we will bitch about it, trust me.
Yeah.
You can tell folks, we're going to be crotchety.
I want to talk about that before we leave.
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about is the amazing thing about these Mexican and Mexican American fighters. They're a different breed. And I don't mean that as in they're a different race, like some stupid. No, the way they trained, the way they fought, their attitude towards the game was just so different than anybody else. Yeah. And that includes, you know, you had the Puerto Rican versus Mexican
rivalries.
And you could see the Puerto Ricans and the Mexicans approached it differently.
Yeah.
You know, when Mancini had his rivalries with all those great Latin fighters, he had a totally different style and way of fighting. What was it that made that Mexican style of fighting so unique? Was it that they're literally fighting for their lives? This is, you know, we're fighting to put food on the table and we're fighting for pride.
Yes. You're all correct on that. You know, don't forget, they all these kids from Mexico City, a lot of these world champions are from Mexico City. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And I've been down there, you know, I've been down many times to Mexico City with Ruben. And, you know, in some of these neighborhoods, there's a pretty big poverty level. And, you know, it's either box or go rob a store and maybe get shot or go to jail. So it boxing is paved a way for many of these kids to become a world champion or a national champion, you know, the Mexican national champion or just a good contender. And it's provided a very great vehicle for these young kids who are just dirt poor, and you know they've succeeded. A lot of them have succeeded. So it's boxing is for that. I love boxing.
I also love that the humility they have, the humbleness. Yeah. I tell people all the time that, you know, I live in a city with multiple big sports franchises. You know, I spent my 20s in bars with all the Buffalo Bills and Sabres, and I know all these athletes and a baseball guy and then the wrestling book. But of all the athletes to be around, there is nothing like the fighters.
Yeah.
Boxers are the nicest, most genuine, most humble, no matter how big they get.
Yes.
Down to earth. And, you know, a lot of times you'll meet football players or basketball players. Once they get to a certain level, they kind of forget where they come from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fighters never do.
Right. Right.
And there's something special about that because there are times, and I'm sure you've had this happen, as much as I love this sport, there are times I'm watching it and it can be so brutal that I think, why do I love this? Why am I enjoying this? What is wrong with me to love this? And what it is it's the people involved. I mean, you love that this is what they're doing to put their lives on the line every night.
They're doing it to entertain us. And we're paying money to watch two guys compete with each other. With this competition, boxing is the oldest sport of mankind. Ever since the cavemen, they were boxing. Man against man to see who's the best. It's a sport. It is brutal. But you're right. You know, the lead up to the – sometimes the lead up, Brian, and remember the old 24/7?
Oh, the HBO series. Yeah, it was phenomenal.
I mean, sometimes that was better than the actual fight. But you get drawn into the personalities of these fighters. Or this guy's from Mexico. This guy's from Puerto Rico. And you know, it draws you in and you know, yes, sometimes you wonder, a lot of people go, oh, I don't like boxing. It's too barbaric, too brutal. But you know what? It's a way to get out of the barrio. It's a way to improve your life. It's a sport. Look at auto racing. I mean, a guy will flip and die. Football, a guy will get, you know, brain damage and kill himself or even die on the field. High school kids unfortunately die there, and college kids from a concussion. So you know, I could hang up and cross the street to go walk to the grocery store and get hit by a car.
Exactly.
You just don't know, Brian. And you know what? I gotta listen to your show again because there's some stuff here I need to put in my next book. I'm coming up with some good.
You know, another thing is people say boxing fans are bloodthirsty, and we're not. No. There's a big difference between boxing fans and MMA fans, and I'm not trying to insult any MMA fans. Go at it. That's your sport. I understand. But in a boxing match, when a fighter gets hit really hard or hurt and goes down, you can almost, after the cheer for the accomplishment, you can almost hear the audience hold their breath until that fighter gets up.
Right, right.
In MMA, they get more bloodthirsty when it happens, and they start cheering the violence when someone's on top of someone, elbowing them in the head. Boxing fans are, it's a different, it's very different.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we want to see a good athletic competition. A good knockout is something, but we don't want to see someone get
hurt. But I want to disclose this. Twice I went to the Olympic, and twice the fighter they got knocked out, didn't survive. And I'll go over the real quick with you. First it was Lupe Pintor against Johnny Owen, 1980. And the second fight was Alberto Davila against Kiko Bejinas, I think in 1982 or something like that. But unfortunately, Johnny Owen from Wales didn't make it, and Kiko Bejinas from Guadalajara, Mexico, didn't make it. And I went home both those nights, and I couldn't sleep because it was bad. You know, you just knew something.
You knew it.
Something bad. Maybe he'd be a veggie or he would die, and in both cases, they died. but I couldn't sleep that night. And once I found out that he died, they both died, I was like in a hiatus from boxing for about 6 months because I just didn't feel good about it.
The last time I covered a fight, when I used to do a lot of boxing writing, and I would have, you know, for those who don't know, there's three sections of ringside that are the high price tickets for the first wheel. The fourth section is where the press sits. So yes, when you're the press, you get those tickets that people are paying $5,000-$10,000 for, and you get paid to be there. But sorry, the last time I ever covered a fight as a journalist, guy took a serious, a light heavyweight took a serious knockout. He was hit with a hook and was out cold, and then took two more punches afterwards before he went down. And it was in the corner right where I was sitting. So we were about 5 feet away from him. And I heard every thud and I saw his eyes roll. And when he went out, he was out. He had to be taken out on a stretcher and on a backboard. Mm-hmm. And he was hospitalized. He was in the hospital for about 2 weeks. Luckily, he survived. His career was over, but he wasn't permanently damaged.
Good, good. But
that was the last time I'm going to do this from ringside covering it. And that was the article I wrote was, why am I covering this?
Scary
publication probably didn't like it very much, but, you know.
It's the truth.
It is. But at the same time, you love and respect these people that do this because they're doing it not only to earn a living, to feed their families, but to entertain us.
Yes, yes.
And I'll tell you something. You will never meet a better class of people than fighters or ex-fighters.
Some of my best friends are former fighters.
Your friend Ruben,
yes,
may be,
yes,
the friendliest, happiest,
yes,
wonderful person, inside or outside of sports. Yes. I have never been in the presence of Ruben where he doesn't have a big smile on his face and is just happy to see people.
Super, super nice guy. Humble, proud of his accomplishments. And if you notice, Brian, that a world champion will cover, they have a certain way about them. I don't know. It's indescribable. But it's just the way they carry themselves.
It's a swagger.
A swagger, the confidence. These guys are Hall of Fame world champions. You look at Carlos Palomino. Look at Ruben Olivares. Carlos Zarate. They just carry themselves, you know. Not, you know, you and me will maybe move faster, do something like weird. But those guys are measured. They're calm. They have a way about them. You watch.
Oh, and they're, because they know I've done something that 99.99999% of the world could never even dream of doing.
World champion.
And once you're world champion, that's it. You're champion forever.
Nobody can take it away from you.
Never. That's, there's so much to admire about it. And to stay so humble and great about it. I mean, hell, if I was given an award tomorrow that said he's the number one podcaster in the world today, I'd be telling everybody, kiss my ass, fuck off, I'm the greatest. No, these guys don't do that.
That's what Larry Holmes said to the announcer right after the Spinks fight.
Yeah.
You got to kiss kind where the sun don't shine.
Although you said that, and Larry's my hero, you know.
Yes, yes, yes.
Larry's my hero. I love Larry.
The Easton assassin.
He, East Coast guy, yeah, Easton, Pennsylvania. He was, Larry Holmes is the reason I started watching boxing.
Wow, wow. Hey, did you go to Atlantic City? I took Ruben there about last year. No, hold it, 2022. Larry Holmes was there. I took Ruben. I took Danny Little Red Lopez, and it was great time. Larry was
there. I was supposed to be there for that.
Atlantic Boxing Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and then, you know, it was still the COVID was just opening things back up, and things were crazy.
Yes.
Oh, God, I miss it. I miss getting together with everybody. I miss you guys coming out to Canastota.
Yeah.
And I'll say this now to anybody who's listening from the Hall of Fame. How the fuck can you have a Hall of Fame without inviting Hall of Famers?
That's what we want to know. You know, we, Ruben was in the second class inducted at again in Canastota at the International in 1991. And I think today he is probably the oldest living inductee that is able to attend. I can't think of anybody else. If you can use your memory there, think of anybody
else. I can't.
Fulmer, Basilio, Carlos Ortiz, Floyd Patterson, Ali,
they're all gone.
Frazier, Arguello, Monzon, everybody's gone. I think Ruben Olivares is the oldest living inductee that can attend, I think.
How's he doing? I haven't seen him in a couple of years. Obviously, you see the champ all the time.
He's doing good. He'll be here in Los Angeles next month. He's invited to the National Boxing Hall of Fame, a great Hall of Fame put on by Bill and Linda Young. And that's going to be on Sunday, April the 28th at the Quiet Canyon in Montebello. They're going to also induct Evander Holyfield, Roy Jones Jr., Sugar Shane Mosley, Hilario Zapata, Vicky Ward, Winky Wright, and many, many more.
And you better tell Ruben that I love him and I miss him. And
I will. I will, Brian.
Now you got your hands in a bunch of projects going on.
Yes, yes, I am. I just want to tell you real quick. We've got the boxing, the 18th and Grand Olympic Auditorium exhibit at La Plaza de Cultura y Artes Museum, a top-notch museum in Los Angeles by Olvera Street. That's going to end on May the 19th. So I encourage all you guys to come out to see that before it ends.
Absolutely. And everyone's got to pick up this book. The new book, I'm going to get the full title, Mexican-American Boxing from the Golden State. You can get it, Gene Aguilera. It is available through Arcadia Press. You can get them on Amazon, right?
Amazon, eBay, through me, and I'll sign it. Just get a hold of me through Facebook or Instagram. Excuse me. You can get a hold of me through OfferUp. They're all on there, and I guarantee everybody, they're not a lot of money. They're only $25, and you will be entertained. And it's a great history lesson into a great sport of boxing for Latino fighters.
And I'll tell you the great thing about these books, they're not, you know, you buy a book, you read the book, it goes on the bookshelf, you never look at it again. That's not these kind of books. Right. These are the kind of books that you will be getting out, going through again, going over again, going, oh, I got to look up that again. Or, oh, I got to show someone this picture from here because they won't believe that they have this. You know, sure. And you'll want to share it with other people that love the sport, yeah, or people that are just starting to love the sport, or someone who might love the sport. It's absolutely amazing. All of your books are absolutely amazing. Just talking to you is absolutely amazing. You know, I love it.
You know, we have.
I'm putting you on the spot in a moment, though.
Hey, I'm ready.
I don't know if you're ready.
Let me just tell you, you know, talking to you is easy, and we're friends. You are the nicest guys, you and your brother, to us in Canastota every year. Just you guys buy Ruben's T-shirts, his photos.
Every year.
You're nice guys to us, and you supported Ruben. Ruben got all the money. But you can see we have a natural friendship that makes doing this interview so easy and enjoyable.
And I'll tell you, I say this to a lot of people, that I go every year to the hall. I've been going year after year after year after year after year. And it's not even so much because it's going to the Hall of Fame inductions anymore. To me, it's a family reunion.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And I think all people who are real fight fans, diehard fight fans, people who love this sport, it is like a family. Because sadly, it's more of a niche sport in this country now. But when you meet another fight fan and you find out they're a fight fan, they become a friend for life.
Yes, yes. There's a bond. There's a great bond that boxing has. Especially there, if you do a weekend with all your friends out in Canasota, you'll never forget it. It's different.
It is very different.
You're at the casino, it's a different feel. Everything's almost basically held at the casino, and I'm not crazy about that. I like the old town vibe of the village, but that's never going to happen again under this regime.
I want to tell a little story to the audience that you were witness to, but you probably don't even remember it. Uh-huh. That what made the Hall of Fame so special, especially back when it was all on the grounds of the hall in this little village of Canastota. We had known each other for several years by this point, and it was either Thursday or Friday afternoon, very quiet on the grounds, not much was happening yet. And I was standing there. I was still smoking cigarettes at the time, which I quit over 10 years ago. So that tells you how long ago that was. And I was standing there having a cigarette. And all of a sudden, I feel a bear hug around my waist. And I turn around and it's Ruben.
Oh, my God.
He came running up from behind me and bear hugged me.
Oh, my God.
Because I'm 6'5". Uh-huh. So, folks, Ruben is, 5'4"?
He's something like that.
And I'm 6'5", so he's got his head buried in my back, his arms around me, and I turn around, and he's holding his championship belt, and he puts it over my shoulder and taps my chest like I was the champ.
Yes, yes.
That's the kind of experiences you would have at the Hall of Fame.
And now, you know, that with the guys, everybody's staying at the casino, so I can't see how the boxers would do. Are they still walking around the grounds?
They do. They still spend time on the grounds. They still do the ringside lectures on the grounds and things like that. But it's not the same because, you know, when everyone stayed at the Days Inn, for those who don't know how Canastota is laid out, Canastota, New York, is a tiny little Erie Canal village right off the exit of the highway, which was pretty much built when the Hall of Fame went there. They gave them an exit ramp. And the Hall of Fame is right off the highway. You literally, as you're pulling off the highway, you see the Hall of Fame. Directly across from the Hall of Fame was a McDonald's and a Days Inn.
Yes, yes.
So all the fighters stayed at this Days Inn,
yes,
right across the street from the hall. So all weekend long, all the guests and all the fighters, if they didn't want to be sitting in their hotel and doing nothing, they're all on the grounds just mingling and walking around. It wasn't like the baseball Hall of Fame where you're roped off or sectioned off or the football Hall of Fame where you can't get near anybody. I remember sitting in the fold-out chairs they had set up for people to watch, like people giving talks and lectures. And I'm sitting there relaxing one day, and a guy comes up to me. Excuse me, do you mind if I sit here? And I look up, and it's Alexis Arguello.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, no, please do. You know, I mean, things like that.
What experiences?
You didn't get that anywhere else, but you got it at the Boxing Hall of Fame. Right. And that's because these people, like I said, they're all that. And I'm not talking just, you know, Alexis Arguello or people that diehards know, but Joe Frazier was like that. You know, the biggest stars in the world. Larry Holmes would be there walking around. Ken Norton was always there having a good time. I mean, it's just, it's very different now.
Yeah.
Like you said, when they got co-sponsored by the Turning Stone Casino, which I love because I'm a degenerate, so I love the Turning Stone Casino. But it's not the same because everyone stays at the casino and, well, there's a lot more to do at the casino than just go across the street to the Hall of Fame.
Yes, yes. And you remember, Brian, that even before they built the Days Inn, everybody was at Graziano's.
Yes, which was about half a block away.
Yeah, yeah, everybody was at Graziano's. All the boxers were staying there, and we would go across the parking lot into the great Italian restaurant bar by of Tony Graziano over there. Who's still alive, by the way.
Yes. And you, I know you remember this. See, let's pretend there's not even an audience here. This is two old friends going down memory lane.
Yeah, yes.
Do you remember what Friday nights were like at Graziano's?
Oh, yes. I had the greatest times. Greatest.
There would be, the whole restaurant and bar would be packed. But not only that, it would spill out into the whole parking lot. Right. And the party went on there, and it was just everybody having a good time, being with friends, talking, getting autographs, getting pictures. You never know who was going to be there. You know, you could be standing in the parking lot talking to your friend, and the next thing you turn around, and Marvin Hagler's standing next to you. You know, or Ray Leonard and
Aaron Pryor.
I once sat at Graziano's bar. I was there in the middle of the afternoon because it was one of those summers that was so hot, and I went in there to get something to drink. And I'm sitting at the bar, very, very few people in there because it was early afternoon. And all of a sudden, Aaron Pryor walks in and sits down next to me at the bar and orders a drink.
Wow.
15 minutes later, Arguello comes in, sits on the other side of me. And I realize, am I the referee now?
Yeah,
I'm between Arguello and Pryor at the bar.
You can't.
Oh.
Can't buy this. This.
The hairs on my arm are standing up talking about these stories.
You can't buy experiences like that, man.
But you are going to be put on the spot now.
Okay.
All right?
Go for it.
We're going to play a game called Top 5.
Okay.
First, you're going to give me your top 5 favorite fighters of all time who are non-Latino.
Oh, non-Latino. Okay.
Yeah, see, I told you I'd make it tough.
Muhammad Ali, Joe Louis, you count them, Sugar Ray Robinson, Henry Armstrong, Harry Grimm.
Oh, you got mine, you bastard. Harry Grimm is always my pick.
Yes, yes.
All right, I'll give you the easy one now. Well, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be tough, but your 5 favorite Latino fighters all time.
Latino or Mexican?
We'll go Latino first.
Okay. Oh, my God. Julio Cesar Chavez, Roberto Duran. I got to put Ruben Olivares in there. Salvador Sanchez. Carlos Monzon.
Oh, good one, too. Now we'll go Mexican. Your 5 favorite Mexicans.
Julio Cesar Chavez, Ruben Olivares, Carlos Zarate, Salvador Sanchez, did I see him?
You did not yet, but...
That's number 4. And number 5. Number 5 is a big tie amongst so many of them. I already said Zarate, right?
Yes.
Number 5. Wow. It's so hard to choose from so many of them.
I know. I told you, you're being put on the spot.
Yes, I'm talking now. I'm not talking Mexican Americans. We're talking about Mexicanos.
Mexicano.
Let's do Benito Lopez. He's retired 50.
Greatest minimum weight fighter that ever lived, but you're wrong. You got a wrong answer, and I told you. There are no wrong answers unless I say you're wrong.
Okay.
At which point, I have to say you're wrong.
Who did I mean?
You left off Daniel Zaragoza.
Ah, a great, great champion. Super bantamweight champion.
Yeah, and you left off Eric Morales.
Yeah, another great. And you, if you want to, you got Barrera. You got Marquez.
Mm-hmm.
You got Chiquita Gonzalez. I mean, you got a lot of great ones, man. That it's a great top 10. Miguel Canto.
But Zaragoza goes on there on my list because A, he was phenomenal, and B, he was so damn ugly without being punched.
You know what? At Halloween, he used to go down walking down the streets, and the kids would get scared without a mask.
But what a fighter, and what a nice guy.
Yes, what a super nice guy, man. He's
now this is going to be tough because, and this one you take a little time on, but this is not even for to play top 5. This is out of my curiosity as a fight fan and historian. The 5 best fights you ever saw live.
Oh my God! Number 1, Zarate Zamora.
You were there for that.
Before him, Battle of the Z's, unbelievable. Both undefeated. just, they don't fight like that anymore, Brian. I mean, just slugfest toe to toe. Number two, I'm going to go Salvador Sanchez against Juan Escobar. Up and down, drag out, knockout fight. Ended up as a draw. With my own eyes. God, I saw so many fights.
I know. And they don't have to be the headlining fights, like you said. That the Escobar-Sanchez fight was on the undercard, you said.
Undercard.
So anywhere on the card.
I'm sorry?
It could be anywhere on the card.
Alberto Davila, Frankie Duarte at the Forum. Bloodbath. And it ends up, Davila ends up cut with a bad cut. And they give it to Duarte on a split decision. When they stop it on a cut, that would be a TKO maybe.
Well, it depends on what round it was in.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it was in the later rounds, like round 9. So it would be.
Would have been a TKO.
TKO. Oh, what a fight that was. Oh my God. With my own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Saw so many of them. Salvador Sanchez against Azabache Martinez when Chavez wins the world title, the Olympic Auditorium. That was his first title, and man, everybody, the odds were favoring. Nobody knew who Chavez was. He just came out of nowhere. He was undefeated. Do you remember that fight?
I do indeed.
Yes, I write about that in my second book, and you can watch it on the tube. What, man, Chavez just totally battered Azabache Martinez, won the first title. It was a fight where they were fighting for the vacant world title. And number five, oh my God, one more to go. It would have. Here we go. Alfonso Zamora against Superfly Sandoval at the Olympic. Non-title fight. But
now, man, that's one I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen that fight.
Watch that on YouTube. You know, Brian, I used to have all on video cassette, the VHS, right?
Oh, yeah.
I just toss them. When YouTube came out, trash. I threw them in the trash.
Yeah, I had walls of videotapes of boxing.
What did you do with yours?
It's funny. Most of my videotapes gone. Ones that I would, like, I looked. There were certain fights that I had on tape that I would look, and I couldn't find them anywhere else. I'm like, okay, I'm keeping those.
You could convert them to DVDs, you know?
I am. They're in a box in one of my closets somewhere, and one day I will.
Yeah.
Because I can't lose it. I mean, it's a passion.
Yes.
Now, we had some great talk. We had some fun talk. We talked about the greatest fighters, the greatest Mexican fighters, the greatest non-Mexican fighters, the greatest fights. And I told you we'd only go about an hour, so I'm going to go bring this up now just so, you know, we don't go too far over that. And I'm sorry to do this to you, but what do you think of the state of the game today?
Oh, Brian. Okay. Just last weekend in Saudi Arabia, former world champion Anthony Joshua, great fighter, goes against a guy who's 0-1, Nadanu?
Yep.
Nadanu?
An MMA fighter.
MMA fighter. Supposedly, I read that Joshua got $50 million. Supposedly, Nadanu got $20 million. Supposedly. Seems kind of everything seems a little high. Because they're non-title fights, but who knows? But to me, it was a horrible matchup. Joshua didn't break a sweat. Knocks this guy out. I saw the knockout at least 5 times. Nagano's hands are down here, opened up. Just and Joshua did what he had to do. He just went right down the middle and knocked him out. I mean, that's not boxing when a world champion fights a guy who's 0-1. That's not right.
Well, it's not right to me. And I don't say this is boxing in general. Because there are some great fighters out there now, and there are some great fights that can be made. But, you know, they're going to sell 80,000 tickets to 57-year-old Mike Tyson versus YouTube star Jake Paul. And that is going to draw more money and more attention and more views than any legitimate fight in the entire sport.
They're friends. Jake Paul, you know, fought in the undercard when Tyson fought Roy Jones Jr. in L.A. They're friends. And, you know, when Tyson fought Roy Jones Jr., it wasn't a real fight. I don't know if this one's going to be a real fight. They haven't really.
I'll tell you, I don't think so. Do you know why? Did you see what the odds opened up at?
10-1.
Jake Paul, 4-1 favorite.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What is that?
YouTube star is a 4-1 favorite over Tyson. He might be 57, but the punch is the last thing to go.
Yes.
If Tyson wanted to punch him, Jake Paul wouldn't wake up.
Well, maybe it's a good paycheck. Tyson gets $30 million. Tyson gets around, it's just estimating, $30 million. Jake Paul get another $30 million. And they tell each other to hold the punches up a little bit. That's what Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. did. They went at it, but they held back a little bit. And I think this is going to be it. The same policy is going to be had for this fight coming up. I like it. I think it's horrible. It's not boxing. But, Brian, I look at the schedules, you know, the boxing schedules coming up, and I follow the sport. I don't know 95% of the names. I follow in the sport.
I'll tell you, there's a fight card coming up on March 30th, which has, I think, three title fights on the card.
Is that the Zoo against?
Yes, the headlining fight, Tim Zoo versus Keith Thurman, is non-title. But it's a good fight still. Keith Thurman might be a little past his prime.
Why not title?
I think he's going up in weight to fight Thurman. Tim Zoo's giving up his title to go up.
Wow.
But, so that's a good fight. An up-and-coming young fighter who's a, you know, son of a legend, Kostya Zoo, his father.
I like Zoo. He's excited. He's a fighter, you know. I like it.
And the whole undercard on that is good.
Yes, Raleigh against a pit bull. To me, that's a man against a kid. I'm not a great big betting man, but I'd put a lot of money on pit bull.
Yeah.
I'd have to give some odds though.
Yeah, but what about Arizandi Lara versus Michael Zarafa? Good fight.
I don't know too much about the opponent of Lara's opponent. Don't know too much about him.
And you know what else was on the undercard of there? I think Elijah Garcia's fighting on the undercard. Another good up and coming fighter.
I will watch it though, no doubt.
Now here's the thing. That's a great fight card. None of them, with the exception of Keith Thurman, are really household names. And even Keith Thurman is an outside household name. And it's still like a $100 pay-per-view card. That's what's killed boxing.
That's what's killed. The guy we used to watch, if it was a real pay-per-view, I mean a top-notch pay-per-view fight, then we watch. But I probably will pay the $100. It's a lot of money. But I probably will because I'm interested in the main and the semi-main.
No, and what's sad is, you know, when they started DAZN, the boxing streaming network, I thought this was what's going to save boxing. You're going to charge us $5.99 or $9.99 a month to have this network. Great, but we'll get all these pay-per-view cards when they do have them. Then all of a sudden, they're like, you're going to pay $9.99 a month, but when we have a good card, you're going to pay an extra $100 for that fight. Why?
Because they weren't getting the buys that they were. They weren't.
Because they gave Canelo that big, huge contract and had to pay it.
Had to cover that, too. What do you think of Canelo Munguia? What do you, give me your take on that.
I don't think it's as easy a fight as everyone else thinks it is.
Yeah, it's not, not it's not going to be easy. But and, Canelo wins, and I think Canelo is doing this just to silence everybody because he just refuses flat out to fight Benavidez, a monster. So,
well, would you? But you know what? That's another thing. I love Canelo. I've always been a big Canelo fan. But you name me another legendary Mexican champion that would refuse to fight someone.
He's ducking. He's ducking. It's very obvious, Brian. Very obvious what's going on.
Would Chavez have ever ducked anybody?
Never. Never. Chavez and Marquez, they make fun of Canelo. They're saying, hey, everybody wants to see this. What's the problem? You know?
Even Mexican-American fighters that people didn't want to like because they were too good-looking, De La Hoya never would have ducked anybody.
Yeah, he never ducked anybody. Never. He fought Vargas. He fought Ike Quarte. He fought
Bazooka Quarte when no one wanted to fight Bazooka Quarte.
Mosley.
Yep, yeah. Mosley twice, even though he lost to him the first time. He gave him that shot again. He didn't have to. De La Hoya was still the A side of that. Right. He didn't have to fight any of the people he did. But De La Hoya was that throwback. He just couldn't. And he also knew that if I lose, but I'm losing to the best out there, but I look good doing it and I can come back, it doesn't kill me.
Right, right.
That's another thing with boxing.
Canelo doesn't believe in that. He wants to go out in his terms. He doesn't want to go out on his back.
It's the Mayweather attitude. You know, Mayweather claims I'm the greatest of all time because I'm 50-0. Forget the fact that at least 30 of my opponents were handpicked.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I'm not going to bash him. When he was a young fighter, when he was Pretty Boy Floyd.
He fought some good opponents.
He fought some great opponents. And he dominated them. Yeah, but then we found out he had brittle hands. His hands would get broken a lot. And he changed his style, which is fine. That's a smart move. But then when it became showmanship, you know, Money Mayweather... You know, do you think he deserved $100 million to fight Conor McGregor? That was nothing more than a glorified sideshow. Oh,
that was it. That's the preface of what's going on right now. So,
and Conor McGregor getting $100 million is a slap into the face of every fighter that ever laced up a pair of gloves and trained.
Mayweather got at least, what, 150?
Yeah.
Mayweather got 250 for Pacquiao.
Yeah. And after he ducked Pacquiao for, what, 8 years?
Yeah, yeah. Pacquiao was ready to go anytime. Pacquiao's ready to go right now.
I don't like making excuses for Pacquiao, but there was the torn shoulder. He wouldn't call the fight off because he couldn't at that point.
Right.
What do you think a two-armed Pacquiao would have done to Mayweather even then?
Pacquiao didn't show up that night. Let's put it that way. That wasn't the Pacquiao we know.
No, he had a torn shoulder. Not much he could do. I was lucky enough to see Pacquiao fight live four times. Wow. I was at four Pacquiao fights, all in Vegas. I was at the first Pacquiao Morales fight.
Wow. That's what that Morales beat him that time, right?
Yes, by 1 point.
Yeah, what a fight.
And it was so funny because folks, look up this fight on YouTube if you can. Manny Pacquiao versus Eric Morales won the first of their three fights. The other two, Morales was already shot and washed up.
Yeah.
That first fight is the closest thing you'll ever see to a Rocky movie. It's two guys standing toe-to-toe for 12 rounds in the ring. My brother looked at me after, you know, Kevin, we've referenced before.
Yes.
He wants me to send his love to. He misses you.
Tell him hello. Ruben. Tell him hello.
We're sitting in the arena. The fight ends. He looks at me and he goes, hey, that's the first 120-120 card I've ever seen in my life. It's a 10-10 round, each guy both times, and I'm happy.
That's a great comment.
And he ended up, Morales ended up winning by 1 point. And here's what brings fight fans together like nothing else. We're in Las Vegas. Half of the arena is all Mexican fans that are there for El Terrible. The other half of the fans are Filipino fans who literally, they put their houses up so they could fly to Vegas to watch Pacquiao. Yep. And that's the passion they had.
Yes.
And you had yelling and fighting and screaming at each other before the fight started throughout the crowd.
Yes.
That fight ended. They read the scorecards. Pacquiao went over and hugged Morales. Uh-huh. And everybody in that crowd were hugging each other. Wow. Every Filipino and Mexican were hugging each other.
Because there was a lot of respect, Brian. A lot of respect because it was a good fight.
It was.
A damn good fight.
But on that note, since we're talking about a good fight, we're going to wrap this up.
Okay.
I want you to tell everybody the name of the book, where to get it, and anything else you want to pitch right now.
Yes, yes, if you don't mind. Mexican-American Boxing from the Golden State is my fourth book, ladies and gentlemen. You can contact Gene Aguilera at GeneAguilera@SBC.net.
Or you SBC can, Global.
I'm sorry. You're right. Wow. SBC. Let me repeat that. GeneAguilera@SBCGlobal.net. You can contact me through there. Or you can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it eBay or directly from Arcadia Publishing. Or I'm offering books on OfferUp, which is the poor man's eBay, I call it.
So, well, you're not a poor man when it comes to knowledge or friendship or the love I have for you, my brother. And you are welcome back on the show anytime.
Thank you. Do you mind if I pitch just a couple signing dates that we have coming up?
Please do.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Saturday, April the 6th, I'll be up in Stockton, California. It's about a six-hour drive from Los Angeles, and I will be at the legendary Fat City Boxing Gym with its owner, Yaki Lopez, who's featured in my book. He has his own chapter, The Great Light Heavyweight Contender, who I call the greatest lightweight to never have won the world title. When it was tough in those days, it was just two divisions, the WBC, WBA, and it was not easy to win a world title in those days. Then Sunday, April the 14th, at La Plaza, the Cultura y Artes Museum in downtown Los Angeles, we're having a boxing expo with panels, and also available is the 18th and Grand movie on documentary on Blu-ray, DVD. Have you seen that one, Brian, by the way?
I have.
Oh,
fantastic.
You're tremendous. So that's Sunday, April 14th from 12 to 5. Then on April 28th, we're having the National Boxing Hall of Fame. And that's going to be in Montebello, and it's put on by Bill and Linda Young. Great, great induction class this year. Hilario Zapata, Mickey Ward, Winky Wright, Roy Jones Jr., Sugar Shane Mosley, Evander Holyfield, and many, many more. And that's going to be on Sunday, April 28th. And right around that weekend, we are going to have – I'm flying in Ruben Olivares and Carlos Arete to do signings for the fans. You can buy gloves, photos from them. So on Friday, April the 26th at Maria's Grill in Downey, California, we'll be there from 5 to 8. Saturday, we'll be at Stephen's Steakhouse from 1 to 3. And on Monday, we'll be at El Pollo Fino in Anaheim from 5 to 8. That's with Ruben Olivares and Carlos Arete, probably the two greatest Mexican bantamweights that ever lived, both in the Hall of Fame, both legendary fighters.
And two of the greatest guys you'll ever meet. Three, if you count Gene.
Oh, my God. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, man.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me on your show. You guys are great. Say hi to your brother. And anything you need, you let me know, and let's see if we can make it happen.
I will indeed. So, from my dear friend Gene Aguilera in the Golden State of California, this is Brian in Buffalo saying good night.
Good night.
You could be turning 50 without the bathroom, buddy.